Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
We're in this series called The Me I Want to Be, and we've been basically talking about some key elements to our lives that we might otherwise overlook that really are the key to us becoming like this person that we always dreamed of being. Like, we always kind of have this like insatiable thirst and hunger for, like, there's got to be more to life, and there's some things that could help us on that route. And so a couple weeks ago we talked about serving, you know, that serving, and you not serving yourself but serving others is a key to you becoming the me you want to be. And then last week we talked about sacrifice and making sacrifices, and that would be a key element to you becoming the me you want to be. And I think those are great things, and they're not very shocking. Today, we continue that journey, and I've been charged with talking to you about prayer. And can we just be honest for a moment? Can I have permission to speak very frankly with you? Can I do that? Is that okay? I think that's the majority. Yeah, I got a majority. Yeah, good. So let me tell you that I think the fact that I have to come up here and talk to you about prayer absolutely sucks. No, seriously, it stinks for me. I mean, seriously, you said I could be honest, right? It stinks. I got to come up here in 35 minutes. I got to talk to you about prayer. You know, like, I got to change your opinion about prayer. I got to try to talk about prayer in such a way that makes you kind of say, I never thought about prayer like that. Because you have your thoughts about prayer. Who doesn't think about prayer? Who hasn't thought about prayer? Who doesn't have an opinion about prayer? Everybody has an opinion about prayer. So it really stinks for me that I have to do this. It's like, I've been thinking about it. I've been laboring over for like 2 weeks. Like, what do you say to a group of people? I mean, everybody thinks they know about prayer. I mean, we have things like people pass away, and newscasters get on the television, sportscasters, whatever, and they say, they even know how to talk about it. They go, our thoughts and prayers are with you. Because we know that's the moment. That's the moment where you at least, that's where everybody can talk about prayer and it's okay, you know? Someone died. So our thoughts and prayers. So everybody knows about prayer. Everybody has thoughts about prayer. And you probably pray. Maybe you're here and maybe you're the type of person, you're like, yeah, I know a thing or two about prayer. I've given up on prayer. It doesn't work. Maybe you're one of those people that, like, you're like, I tried, like, twice. God doesn't listen. Seriously. Like, twice I did. Seriously. One time I was in, like, school and I was like, God, please help me with math. Please. And then the next day I went into math class and I was like, God, please don't let there be a pop quiz. Please. And the teacher walked in and what'd he say? Pop quiz. And I was like, you're dead to me. You don't listen, you know, because you tried. You tried a couple times, and, you know, God didn't respond, and you're like, I've given up on prayer. Prayer, I know it's for some people, but it doesn't work. And then other people, are, you know, maybe you're like, no, I really believe in prayer. Prayer is beautiful. And there's some people who, they're very intentional about prayer. They're very reverent about prayer. I mean, let's think about everybody prays, and we'll get to everybody in a second. But, I mean, come on, every world religion, Hindus, Muslims, Jews, religious Christians, everybody prays. I mean, some people pray very reverently. Some people pray formulas. Some people pray the same words over and over again. Some people pray and they say a certain thing. They stand in a certain spot. They face a certain direction. They lay down a certain mat. They wear certain clothes. I mean, they're very reverent. They're very respectful about prayer. They're very disciplined about prayer. They believe in it and they do it, and they do it a lot more disciplined than I do. But and some people like this. So maybe you come to it from that position. Maybe you're one of those people who pray and you figure it out. You know how prayer works. Prayer is nothing more than a bartering system. Yeah. You just negotiate with God. You just, you know, so maybe you approach prayer like that. Maybe you've come into prayer and you're like, I think I've got a system down that works for me. Hey, God, listen. Hey, not a big thing. I know you're busy. Because, yeah, you're God. So I was thought maybe I'd just ask you for a little favor. It's just could you just do me a skinny? I mean, it's just a little thing. That's why we call it a skinny. It's just a little. It's not big, it's a skinny. Come on, just do me a skinny. Help me close the deal. Can I just close the deal? Just help me close the deal. And, you know, it's not a big thing. I don't think that's too much trouble for you. I know you're, again, I know you're busy, but I don't know it's not too much trouble. And if you help me close the deal, then how about I'll go work with the homeless. Like once. I mean, let's not get unreasonable. Like one time I'll go. And I'll do like one of those feeding lines. And I'll do it on a Friday because that'll be inconvenient for me because, you know, Friday I want to get home. And so I'll do that. And so you've worked out a bartering system and you think it works. You think that's the key to prayer. And then maybe you're here and you're saying, Rob, you said everybody prays. That's a lie. I don't pray. Maybe you're here and you're like, I'm not even sure I believe in any of this stuff. Maybe you're here and you're like, I'm pretty sure I'm atheist. And if you are, by the way, welcome. We're glad you're here. But maybe you're approaching that. Well, I've been there. But listen, everybody prays. everybody if the conditions are right. You know what I'm saying? Even hardcore atheists will throw out one just in case. Anybody know what I'm talking about? If the conditions of your life get better, just in case, I mean, I'll shoot one out. You wouldn't tell anybody if you're in that position, but you would. In fact, I was on a plane ride from Reno to Las Vegas last year, and we were coming, which is a short ride, but it's a painful ride. Anybody ever made it? It's rough. Coming over the mountains, it gets bad. Well, this flight, we were coming over the mountains, and it got rough. And I don't even want to say, like, if I said to you it got turbulent, you would think, but it wasn't like that. It was bad. It got really bad. In fact, the captain came over and said, boom, folks, it's about to get a little rough. He lied. It got really, really rough. It was so bad that literally we were just getting thrown all over the place. And like, it felt like your head was going to hit the luggage rack, even though you were securely fastened in your seatbelt. And it got so bad, I kid you not, people were vomiting, which is never fun. People were sobbing. I mean, they were just crying. They were like, we're not going to make it. It's going to be bad. It's bad. So it was getting really weird. It was a weird vibe on the plane. There were people who really felt like we were going to go down. And I'll just never forget, I was in the front row and I was on the aisle seat and there was nobody in the middle, which is really good because it's like, don't touch me, seriously. But and so there was a guy at the window seat and I was on the aisle and it's bad. I mean, we're just getting thrown all over the place. It's bad. People are crying, sobbing, vomiting. The whole thing's happening. People, the flight attendants can't be seen because they're strapped in. And this guy, he's just got his hands on his knees and he's literally muttering under his breath. He's going, God, if you're out, please help, save us. For the sake of the children on the plane, God. For the sake of the kids, if you just do it for that, just do it. Help, help, amen. And so I looked at him, I said, you think it'll help? You know, because I was trying to take his mind off it, you know. Right. And this is what he said to me. He said, man, I don't even believe in God, but it can't hurt. You should do it too. So he said, which was very funny to me because it never occurred to me, like I'm somebody who has very firm faith in God. I feel I'm very connected to God and Christ. And so, but it never occurred to me, like when the plane was going down, to go, what if there is no God? I'm going to abort my faith. Can't fool me. Ha ha. Wait a minute. Who am I talking to? Yeah, never mind. It gets really weird. But anyway, I mean, prayer. I mean, everybody knows about prayer. Everybody thinks they know something about prayer. I mean, what am I going to say to you? Like, how do I, in the next, now I just got 30 minutes. I've just killed five of them complaining to you about my plight here, my dilemma. But how do I change your perspective on prayer? How do I get you to see prayer in a different way? I have nothing for you. I'm just being honest. I mean, because you know. I mean, it's almost offensive for me to say, hey, there's some things about prayer you don't. You're like, yeah, I know how to pray. Everybody knows how to pray. Everybody's prayed a prayer. Everybody sat down. Sometimes we pray at night. We say, now I lay me down to sleep. You know, we like our formal prayers. Pray the Lord my soul to keep if I die before I wake. I hope it's not an earthquake. I don't know. I don't know the prayer. Sometimes you sit down before your meal and say, good food, good meat, good Lord, let's eat, you know, something. Gee, you know what you're doing. You know what you're comfortable with. And so how do you express that? And I feel like, you know, I got nothing. But fortunately, there was a time in the life of Jesus where he actually faced this issue. Unbelievably to me, like somebody asked him to teach them how to pray. Which is unbelievable to me, because it's never occurred to me to even go to somebody and go, hey, could you teach me how to pray? I don't know if I'm doing it right. It's never occurred to me. And there was actually a moment in the life of Jesus where his people, he's doing his Jesus thing, and he's got his disciples with him, and they're his closest running mates, and they're with him. And that one of the, they decide somehow that they're going to ask Jesus, hey, can you teach us that? Can you teach us how to pray? Which is shocking to me. That somebody would actually ask somebody else, hey, can you teach me how to pray? It's just, it's shocking. And so I always wonder, like, what do these conversations look like? Like, were the disciples all together? And the Bible says that Jesus was praying. He was actually praying at the time. And that the disciples were, I wonder, like, were they together going, hey, man, we should ask him about how he does that. Like, what is that? Like, hey, John, you ask him. I'm not asking him, man. I always ask him. You guys always put me up to it. You know, and like, Peter, you ask him. I'm not asking him, and he'll call me Satan again. Because one time Jesus called Peter Satan. It was hysterical. And so he was like, I'm not doing it, man. I got set up last time. I'm falling for that again. And then somebody else is like, man, I'm not doing it, man. Bartholomew, you do something, man. What have you ever done? People won't even write about you, man. Like, I mean, like, what was that conversation like? Those guys, but at some point, Jesus stops praying. He's done, and they walk up, and I mean, I wonder, like, if they were like, hey, Jesus, just the fellas and I were talking, and I don't want to trouble you. I'd be just thinking, you were praying. I mean, I know you know, but you were praying. But we were just like, you think you could teach us that? I mean, could you teach us how to pray? You know, Jesus, he had the response that I think is completely reasonable. He was like, are you serious? Teach how to pray? You know who I am? I'm Son of God. I'm busy. I got things. I got lepers to heal. I got sick to deal with. I got issues, man. I got Pharisees on my tail. I got all these issues, man. And you're asking me to teach you how to pray? Come on, if you're going to ask me something important, I'm not going to teach you how to pray. Are you serious? It's just a conversation with God. Just talk to God. You're Jewish, for the love of Pete. You know how to pray. They would have, you know? I mean, these guys grew up under a very strict religious system where they prayed prayers, where they had to memorize, like portions of Scripture that we can't even begin to understand, like memorize the entire Old Testament. Could you imagine? Seriously? And they would memorize prayers. They had this prayer called the Shema, which is just fun to say. That's why I threw it in. It's based on Deuteronomy 6. It's a beautiful prayer, but it's this rote prayer that you pray over and over. They would have known. They would have been taught. They would have been taught over and over again to pray. And they asked Jesus how to pray. And of course, Jesus was like, come on, seriously, don't waste my time. I've got things to do. You've been taught that stuff. Seriously. Of course, Jesus didn't do that. Seriously, no, he didn't. That's how I would have acted. Clearly, because I'm up here complaining about. but not Jesus. In fact, Jesus does something that would have been equally as stunning as that. Like, that would have been stunning if he would have responded that way, surely. But in my opinion, he responded with something equally as stunning. He just said, okay, here's what you should do. And he did. He started leading them in a prayer to show them, okay, yeah, I can see clearly you're doing it wrong. I don't know how that worked. But he just started to teach them how to pray. And it's kind of unbelievable to me. It's like, so he just started teaching them how to pray, and that brings in all kinds of issues for us to think about and wrestle with. Well, then, should we pray the exact prayer that he prayed? Because was he giving us a model to pray then? Was he giving us some sort of pattern? Was he giving us words? What was he doing with that group? See, here's what I think. I think that was a really real moment between Jesus and very real men who are following him. And I think sometimes we cheapen those moments, if I can be honest with you. I think sometimes we just turn them into something cheap and go, how do we just break a formula out of this? And boom. But I think a very real moment occurred. I think what happened is there was a group of people following Jesus who had been taught how to pray, who knew a lot about prayer, who knew a lot about Scripture, who knew a lot about a lot of things involved with any kind of religious system. And then they were walking with Jesus and they were like, we don't do that. Whatever we've been shown is not that. And clearly there was a marked enough difference to where they said, could you show us how to do that? This is real. And so Jesus goes in to this amazing discourse. And so I chose to read it out of the Gospel of Luke because it has a couple key things that I enjoy, but it's also written in Matthew 6 is another time where Jesus prays a very similar prayer. It's probably, in fact, the one you know and probably everybody's heard because it's been in movies. Maybe you've heard it sung at a wedding. Maybe you've seen it at like some sort of funeral scene in a movie. It's the famed Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Now, I'm going to show you a passage and you're going to read it and you're going to go, hey, it's incomplete. What's the deal? Did Jesus not know his own prayer? Did he not memorize his own prayer? But I think there's something to that. Jesus didn't always say the same words and I don't want you to miss that. But there's a pattern, there's an idea to what Jesus is saying that's very important if you really want to know God and if you really want to be the person you really want to be. There is something very, very key here. So it's in Luke chapter 11, and we'll go through a couple of the points that will come up behind me. There it is. One day, Luke says, Jesus was praying at a certain place. Now let's just stop there for a second. Jesus was praying at a certain place. So this is what I take from that. I think that Jesus knew that there were certain things that he should do to eliminate distractions so that he could really pray. Like, I think Jesus was all about just praying constantly. Paul will later say, one of the first Corinthians would say, pray without ceasing. So he would just pray in every moment of his day. But there was a point where Jesus knew, there's a time when I've just got to get away. I've got to steal away, and I've just got to be in a place that's good for me. I'm so grateful that Luke didn't write more specific detail about the fact. Like, I'm glad that Luke didn't say one day Jesus was praying under an olive tree with a fig branch in his mouth, and he was sitting in a certain position, because you know what religion would do with that, right? Right? Anytime you came to anybody who was religious and said, man, I'm having a hard time in prayer, they go, well, you know why? Because you're not praying under an olive tree in a crouched position with a fig leaf in your mouth. And you know, that's what they would say. And they'd say, well, I don't have an olive tree. Well, yeah, I guess you need to grow one. In Las Vegas, yeah, it's going to take a while, but that's patience, and God's trying to teach you that. That's what religious people would say. Right? Right? That's what religious people do. They just go, well, let's try to completely duplicate and recreate the same thing. And so I'm grateful that Luke points out that there was a certain place that Jesus definitely had a rhythm. But this wasn't just something that Jesus was all willy-nilly about and going, I don't know, when I just feel like it, I just throw it out. Because if it was that way, when they said, Jesus, will you teach us to pray? His response surely would have been, teach you to pray? Well, just throw out a prayer, man, just when you feel like it, just have a prayer. But he doesn't do that. He says, yeah, sure, here you go. And he teaches them. So I'm glad Luke says at a certain place there's a rhythm that you have to find in your life. And it's different for you than it is for me, surely. And it's different for me than it is for you. And maybe a couple of us have some things in common, but it's different. I mean, you have to kind of find that place. It's kind of based on who you are, where you are with God. But there's a certain place, there's a certain rhythm that you have to find. And so Luke says, one day Jesus was praying in a certain place. When he finished, one of his disciples said to him, Lord, teach us to pray, just as John taught his disciples. Now, you should know John here is the one that God sent before Jesus to point out who Jesus was. His name is, he's known as John the Baptist, but I assure you it was more like John the Baptizer because he baptized people. He most assuredly was not a Baptist. No offense to the Baptists, but, well, a little offense to the Baptists. If I'm being honest, I asked if I could speak frankly, a little offense. But, yeah, but basically he baptized people, and so he got the moniker John the Baptist. And so he had disciples, and he was teaching them to pray apparently as well. And so his disciples say, we teach us the way John taught his disciples. So Jesus said to them, when you pray, say, Father, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come. Give us each day our daily bread. Forgive us our sins, for we also forgive everyone who sins against us. And lead us not into temptation. If it were me, I'd say, because I can find it on my own. Yeah, okay. I'm totally capable of that. So he's done. It's like, boom, so that's it. Wait a minute. And see, if we're not careful, what will go is, okay, so he said when we pray this. So then we start just going, okay, so we should pray, Father, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us, and lead us not into temptation. Seriously, God, I got problems. I got needs. That's what I'm really doing here. I know you said to say that, but I got needs. I got things. I've got a laundry list of things. I mean, if we're being honest, that's really, right? This has got to be way more than just say these words. There's some principles in play here that are so huge for us. And if we're not careful, we'll just miss them. We'll just skip right over them and say, oh, it just must be those words. Those must be like magic words. Like, I got my rabbit's foot in one hand. I got my Lord's Prayer coming out of my mouth. I haven't walked under a ladder, had a black cat cross my path, never broken a mirror. I should be good, right? I'm going to get this parking space. No one knows what I'm talking about, right? We're just like, God, do my bidding. But there's way more going on here. I mean, there's way more at play. First of all, get this. This will rock you. It should rock you. It probably doesn't rock you because you've probably heard it so much now, thanks to Jesus, that it doesn't seem that stunning anymore. But to who he's talking to, he says something stunning right out of the gate. He says, when you pray, say, Father. Father. Listen, he was talking to a group of Jewish boys, good Jewish boys, who had surely been taught that you be very careful about how you even utter the name of God. If you go to write the name of God, you better make sure you write with a quill that doesn't have newly dipped ink. I'm serious. I mean, there were rules about how you even address God, because God was a very reverent peace, because that's what we do with religion. Isn't that what we do? And let's be honest, and I throw Christians in, there are Christians who are so religious that they've just turned God right into that same thing. He's just a reverent God. He's out there, and we like our God at a distance, if we can be honest. We kind of like it that way. We kind of like knowing, hey, you're out there. I'll let you know when I need you. I'll try not to be too offensive, but you know, I know your place, and you know, here I am. We like that. But Jesus introduces a whole new realm. He says, when you pray, say, Father. These Jewish guys had to be like, I'm sorry, what? I know you're Son of God, so that would give you immediate right to call him Father, but you're saying, you're inviting us to call God Father? Jesus is like, yeah, when you pray, say, Father. Yeah, okay, did you say Father? That's a little too intimate, isn't it? Isn't that a little too personal? And if we were being completely honest, there's probably some of us in this very room that makes us uncomfortable for a variety of reasons. Maybe you had an absentee father. Maybe you had an abusive father. Maybe you had a less than father. I assure you, every single person in this room had a father that was less than perfect. On some level, your father was dysfunctional, is dysfunctional. And so sometimes we have a hard time with it. We go, I'm praying to Father. I don't have good images of Father, Rob. Seriously, I don't think you understand. Actually, I do. We got Father. But here's the thing, not father like your father like perfect father, a father who loves you with a perfect love, who wants to be that connected to you, but also father like, in other words, the relationship is not like this, the relationship is like this. I mean, he's our father. He's our perfect father. So right away, this introduces all new implications about what the potential of prayer really is. And so I want to quickly try to start moving because I'm, again, running out of time. But I want to tell you a real-life father and son story. I have a son who just turned 17 on Friday, which I'm really not dealing well with. He's 17. I'm like, what on earth? But about 9 years ago when he was 8, we lived back east on the East Coast area. In fact, we were in North Carolina. I was in school at a seminary. And we lived in this little town. And we lived in this little bitty townhouse complex right near the campus of the seminary in a 700-square-foot townhouse that was quite cramped. You know, we were literally cramped in. Our children's bedroom was so small. It was about the size of a walk-in closet. And so small, in fact, that we couldn't fit two beds in, so we had to go out and buy them bunk beds. Before you feel bad for us, not that you would, but or feel bad for my kids, they loved it there. You know why? Because in that neighborhood, there were kids from all over the world. Their families were attending the school. There were kids from all over the world. There were Kenyan kids from Africa, and other African countries were represented, children. And then there was Brazilian children. There were Guatemalan children. There were Russian children. There were Eastern European children. It was children just from all over. And so my kids just loved it. They were just always outside getting bit by mosquitoes, because if you ever live there, you know it's bad. So they're always getting eaten alive. But they loved it. I mean, they'd come in with mosquito bites all over. We'd be spraying off. I mean, our house smelled like off. It was bad. But they loved it. And so one day my son comes to me. He says, Dad, I got a problem. Which as a father, you're like, what? Okay, buddy, what's up? And he said, can I talk to you? And I said, well, yeah, you know you can talk to me, man. What do you need? Anything? And he said, well, can we go upstairs and talk? And I was like, yeah, okay. And my mind's racing like, he's 8. What could we be? Not yet. Come on. And so, you know, so we go upstairs and we go in his room. And he says, Dad, I just got a problem, and I know you can help me. And I was like, okay, well, okay, I like how that's starting. And he's like, we're playing football outside? Because they played football. What they did is all the kids got together and they played football out front. And several of us guys would be all-time quarterback for them. Anybody? Any guys? Come on. All-time quarterback. Yeah, that's right. And so I'd play, and sometimes a guy named John, who lived across the way, would play all-time quarterback with him. Sometimes Daniel, who lived next door, would do it. But he said, we're playing. I was like, yeah. He's like, I'm not very good. I was like, no, I think you're doing great, man. Don't be so hard on yourself. And he said, no, I'm not fast. Those other boys are fast. And I was like, yeah, they are. They're from Kenya, Logan. You're never going to outrun them, man. Just give up the dream. They're fast and you're not. Yeah, that's true. And he was like, I feel like I'm letting my team down. And I was like, oh, wow. He's like, every time I play, I said, I'm not contributing enough. Can you help me? I know you can help me. I was like, well, yeah. I was like, well, let's reframe it, buddy. Let's think about, I mean, they're fast. Yeah, they're faster than you. Sure. But what do you have that they don't have? Like, think about it like that. Like, you have gifts. And he was like, oh, I don't know. I was like, Logan, you're the smartest kid I know. I mean, you you take after your mom, clearly, you know. I want a piece of bacon. Yeah, whatever. But it's like, you're smart, man. Outsmart them. And he was like, well, how do you do that in football? I was like, yeah, I know football isn't normally associated with intelligence, but there is intelligence to the game. Those little, you know, football players. Never mind. All right, so I said, so why don't we do this? I said, I'm not going to be unfair. I'm not going to give you unfair advantages. That wouldn't be right. I said, but I'll work with you. How about we work on some plays? How about we work on some things to maybe where you could outsmart your defender and it would leave you open? And then, you know, when you get open, you would catch. And he was like, oh, we could do that? And I was like, yeah. I said, why don't you go study some, you know, where should receiver line up? How does that look like? And he did. He was like, okay, I'll do it. And he put some time in, and he went down, and he studied. He was like, this is where a slot receiver lines up. This is where a flanker lines up. And he had some things, and we got together, and we made different plays. And he was like, he was totally like, I'm going to catch some passes. And I was like, yeah, I think you will. I was like, but why don't we do this, Log? Why don't we come up with a couple plays where you could actually score? And he looked at me. He was like, what? And I was like, yeah, don't you want to score a touchdown? He was like, yeah. And I was like, well, let's dream big here. Let's come up with a couple plays. Let's think a couple plays that might free you up. If we created the right circumstance, it would free you up and you could actually score a touchdown. And he was like, I don't know. Okay. And so we came up with a gem of a play. We came up with all kinds of plays. And he's very smart. He came up with all kinds of plays. We had different codes for him. We would call him things in the huddle like green 14. You do a down and out, you do this, and all the kids would be like, what's a green 14? Ask him. So, and we had all kinds of plays that we'd work out. It was like that. So one play, though, in particular that was totally designed to help him score was a play that we called the flanker screen fake fly. That was beautiful. And our code for that was blue 242. I have no idea why. I think he liked the color blue. Anyway, but the flanker screen fake fly worked like this. It would only work if the conditions were right, you understand. The defender had to be antsy, and the defender had to play up on Logan really tight. The guy who was covering had to get up and get really tight to the line. And if he was tight to the line, it would be a perfect opportunity for me to just yell out, hey, blue 242, and then Logan would know, I'm changing the play. That's called an audible. And I would say, like, and here's what would happen. I would fake, like, I'm going to throw him a screen pass, and he's in a flanker position. A screen pass is behind the line of scrimmage, for those of you who don't know. I'm not assuming it's the ladies, but come on, ladies, you don't know. Some of you know. But so anyway, so he would stand there, and he would turn like this, like he was going to catch a pass from me. I'd pump fake, and then hopefully the defender would bite, thinking he would get a pick six, which if you don't know, it's where you pick the ball off and run it for a touchdown and score 6 points. So they would bite, and then he would just take off and run a fly pattern and be wide open. That's how it should work. I mean, reasonably. But you have to wait to the perfect time in the game. And so we're in this particular game, and Logan's doing really well. The plays are working. And now it's crunch time in the game. I mean, it's right down. It's at that moment of the game where everybody says, hey, I'm getting tired. My mom just called me to eat. Next touchdown wins. Guys, you ever play? Next touchdown wins. So it's game winning TD time. So Logan comes to me. He's like, Dad, let's do the play. I was like, it's not the right time, dude. He's not playing up. If we use it now and we waste it, it won't work. And then they'll know what you're doing. And you don't want to just be patient. Be patient. And he was like, I was like, I know. And now it's like game-winning TD time. We get in the huddle. It's crunch time. I got down in the huddle. I said, okay, you, down and out. You, button hook. You run a post. Logan, green 18, he was like, yeah. I was like, but keep your eye open. You never know. And I was like, all right, you ready? On two. Break. And I stepped up. I stepped up to the line of scrimmage, reached down, grabbed the football. Down! Set! Because it was a game-winning moment, the defense was antsy. The defender started creeping up. He got right on Logan. He was literally doing this. You could tell his adrenaline was pumping, right? And I was like, oh, I think this is it. I look over at Logan. Logan's looking at me. He's like, and I'm like, I see it. And I'm like, blue, 242. Blue, 242. You know, he's like, yeah. Hot one. Hot two. I step back. I pump fake hard. Logan turns. Defender bites. Tori's like, Logan takes off running. Defender's like, ugh. He turns around and starts chasing. I see Logan. Then I look away. Clever me. To act like I don't see Logan. I look over here. And then I come back. And I throw the ball deep. Perfect spiral. I know some of you think he's going to drop it, but he didn't. Perfect pass. He catches it. He's running. The kid who was defending him almost caught him, because remember, he's fast. And Logan's not. But Logan runs into the end zone, untouched, scores his first ever touchdown. Woo! Thanks. It was killer. Yeah, we hugged and embraced. It was a great moment. What if prayer is more like that? Have you ever thought about that? I mean, I know you're like, oh, come on, really? Yeah, no, really. What if prayer is more like that? What if what Jesus is saying is like, go to your father? There's a word there. It's like Abba Father, like daddy. Like, seriously, dad? Like, go to your dad? Yeah. Go to your dad. What if prayer is more like that? What if it's that intimate? What if it's like, dad? And look at the pattern. Look what Jesus says to do. Like, pray, our Father, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come. Give us this day our daily bread. You find this pattern. And when Logan approaches me, he says, dad, I got a problem. Can you help me? Because I know you can help me. And whatever you say to do, Logan told me that thing, whatever you say, I'm going to go with. I know it's all right. There's that moment. Do you get what I'm saying? And Jesus will talk about this later on. He'll say, what kind of father, if their child comes to him and asks for something, gives him a snake instead? Like, he says, if people are evil and they wouldn't do that, how much greater is your Father in heaven? What if prayer is more like that? What if prayer is that intimate? What if your God is that approachable? What if it's like I can just go to him and say, look, I'm struggling, and I know you're great. I know whatever it is I'm struggling with, you can see past it, you can see beyond it, because that's who you are. You're the perfect Father. So whatever the dilemma, I know you could help me. And is it just possible that when we start praying and we start taking the focus, we see our issue, but we go to our Father because we know our Father can help, and we will listen to our Father, and we'll be obedient to our Father. I mean, think about the implications of what Jesus is saying. That you have a Father that loves you. Like, I got to tell you, I love my kids. I love them. But I'm a way flawed father. With a great deal of neuroses that I don't mean to, but I pour them into my kids. How much greater does God love you? I tell my kids all the time, I am so privileged to be your earthly father. I can't even believe I get to be your dad. You're so great. My kids are great. But I'm telling you, it's nothing. My greatest job is to point you to your true father. The perfect father. What if you could approach God like this? And you know what? What if God didn't respond with like, okay, yeah, I'll break their legs for you so you can be faster than them? Because that's not how I respond. I said, yeah, they're faster than me, but what do you have? How could I work with you? Are you willing to work this out? Are you willing to work? Are you willing to, we'll work this out together, but are you willing to stay with this and really do something? And then what if your God had bigger dreams for you than you actually had? What if you were like, I just want to get out of this mess? And what if God were like, not only do I want you to get out of the mess, I want you to do this. You never heard of it. What if you could score? I mean, what if prayer were more like that? It's not as nice and neat, surely. It's messier. What if you had the same person? People always say, like, how long should I pray, bro? I don't know. How long would it take you to work that out? How long would it take you to get into a spot where you would say, Father, you're great. You're so great. And I've got some things, but I need to first tell you how great I think you are, because I know you can help me. And I know how great you are, and I know how much you love. And first things, I want you to know, your kingdom, God, not mine, because I know my place in your kingdom is better than your place in mine. Do you get that? Because most of us pray, if we're honest, like, my kingdom, my kingdom, my kingdom. Do this for me, God. Do this for me. Do this for me. But what if you could actually start to say, your kingdom is great. My place in your kingdom has got to be better than your place in mine. I don't know. How long would that take for you to get there? How long would it take for you to acknowledge that God is so unbelievably good? How long would it take? It might take you 2 minutes. You might get up in the morning and be like, I'm fired up. I'm ready. God, I know you're great. It might take you a little more time to work that out. I don't know. It's not that neat and clean. But it is that beautiful. It is that personal. It is that intimate. It's amazing. I remember one time I was really struggling. I'm going to be honest with you. My wife and I planted a church before we ever moved to Las Vegas back in Virginia. And I was really struggling. There was an entire group of people in the church who were not being very nice to me. That never happens, right? But it was a very tough time for me. And so what I do, that certain place for me often is me just walking with my camera. I'm very visually stimulated. I'm sort of external in that way. And so I need things to stimulate me, and images stimulate me, and they help me think spiritually. And so I often walk around with my camera. And so this is what I did. I took my camera and I went for a walk, and I just decided, I told Shaw, I'm not coming back till I work a few things out with God. I'm not in a good place. I can't say, God, I think you're great right now. I can't even say, because right now I'm going, God, are you even there? So I need to just go and work this out. I can't say right now, God, your kingdom is greater than mine, because I'm consumed right now with my kingdom. So I'm just going to go. And I don't know how long it's going to take, but it's going to be a while. So I took my camera and I went off. And I went walking. And I snapped off photos of different things and prayed and said, God, you know, I'm struggling, blah, 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 and I was really doing battle. I was praying more like a psalmist. I was praying like, you need to kill some people, because if I kill them, I have to go to jail, and no one wants that. But you could kill them, and it wouldn't be a problem at all. You know, it's like, come on. You pray like that. Remember, we're going to be honest, right? But I was just like, God, seriously, this is not good. And I could not get close to this prayer. I could not get close to this pattern of saying, God, you're unbelievable. You're great. And I know my spot in your kingdom is better than your spot in mine. And I know that whatever it is, you'll just give me what I need, not what I want, which I think sucks. You know, I was at that point. I couldn't say those things. I couldn't say it. And so I just stayed outside walking and taking pictures and praying and talking and just walking and talking. I just couldn't get there. Finally, I got tired and I had to do something. And so what I've learned to do in my life is, if I can't get resolved, I just come back the next time I can. I mean, we all have appointments, we have a life we have to keep, so I had to get back at some point. I still wasn't there. But I said, okay, God, we'll pick it back up later, because I'm not there. I'm not with you on this. I'm just not. And I was walking back to my house, and I was walking up to the driveway, and there was this flower bed off to the right of our driveway, which will give you a little backstory real quick. It had a tree in it that stood about 60 feet tall. And the tree got sick. It got some sort of disease. In fact, it started foaming at the roots. And I remember thinking, hey, I don't know a lot about a lot of things, but I know that's not good. And that stinks, you know, so I actually cut that down. Well, before I got a chance to have it cut down, because, like, I'm going to go out and cut it down. Like, that was funny, actually. Like, So before I get a chance to have somebody help me cut it down, I'm coming home one day, and the tree has fallen onto our neighbor's cars. Just fell over, and which is not good, but they were great about it. It was awesome. But here's what happened in that flower bed. Nothing would grow there then. It was like the whole flower bed was diseased and nothing would grow there. In fact, I took a picture of it later so you get a little. I mean, that was the flower bed. See, that big hole in the middle is where the tree once stood, and that thing was nasty. And if it had rained, which it rains in the east, by the way, if it had rained, it was just disgusting. It was just a big mud pit, and that's what it was. And so I was coming back up to my house, and I was walking in that very driveway up that spot, and I was just praying, and I was like, God, I just need to hear from you. Will you tell me something? And I'm about to make myself very vulnerable to you, because you're going to go like, this is getting freaky, Rob. And I know it's freaky, but this is real. I didn't hear an audible voice, because if God literally said to me, Rob, I'd be like, brown pants, please. That would scare me. But I wouldn't like that. But God does speak, you know. He speaks in that internal, that still small voice in you, that voice that's often contrarian to mine, that voice that in bizarre ways tells me to do good things, that I'm like, I don't want to do those things. That voice that tells me to do bizarre things, and this was one of those moments. And I was walking up that driveway, and I was sitting there, and it had just rained, and so that thing was a mud pit, and I felt like this voice inside me that I now recognize as God speaking from within said to me, Rob, I want you to lay down. in that flower bed? And I said, no. No, I'm not doing that. That's stupid. And I heard again, Rob, I want you to lay down in that flower bed. And I said, no, I'm wearing my favorite jeans. I'm not doing that. It's ridiculous. It's muddy. I'm not going to do that. That's just ridiculous. And I felt again, like, Rob, I want you to lay down in that flower bed. And I said, I'm not doing it. My neighbors are going to think I'm an idiot. Seriously. Aren't you worried that I'd look like an idiot? God is not often worried about that, by the way. And so I was like, you know, I don't want to do that. I'm going to look like an idiot. Like, I'm not doing that. And so finally it was like, Rob, you came out here to do business. Lay down. Seriously. So I take my camera and I put it over here on the back side because I don't want to get my camera all messed up. I put my knees down on the side of the wood and I'm like, I don't believe I'm doing this. I put my hands down. It's like, ugh. I lay down my front part. And I'm like, and I got my, I'm face down in this flower bed laying in mud, which I realize you're like, you're an idiot. Yeah, I felt like one. But here's the thing that happened. I literally laid there with my eyes closed and I was like, seriously, God, what could be the benefit of this? And I put my chin up on the mud and I opened my eyes and I immediately reached for my camera. And I knew, and this is the picture I then took. From the middle of the mud pit. So if you go back, could you go back to the other photo? That, can we go back? That picture was right on the right side of that circular hole there. The flower is only about this big. That's the photo I took. And do you realize what then was communicated to me was this idea that's been with me ever since? And I've never even been able to fully articulate the idea until I thought about, what would I say to a group of people if I was talking about prayer? And the idea is this. If prayer for you, however it is you're doing it now, if you're praying, if it doesn't rattle you, if it doesn't shake you, if it doesn't change your perspective, then you are not praying to the God that created you. You are praying to a God that you have created. Because honestly, if you're praying to your perfect Father, it will rock you. It will change you. You will see things that you never thought you'd see. You will do things you never thought you'd do. It will change the way you behave. You will become the me that you want to be. And so in Verge, we teach this little thing on prayer. It's like a little acrostic, which I realize, you go, well, isn't that a formula? It's kind of a formula. But also, there is something to when you're first learning a new habit that you have to kind of have a checklist, a mental checklist. Let's be honest. My son is learning how to drive, and when we got in the car for the first lesson, I was like, we need a mental checklist. Check this, check this, check this. Remember this. This is a killing machine. Seriously, take this seriously. You know, it's like you need a checklist. And so we've come up with this thing for pray, and the P is praise, because Jesus said, just come with praise. Come with praise. God, you are so unbelievably good. Hallowed is your name. I mean, you are unbelievable. You are my perfect Father. Come with praise that reaches into the fact that your kingdom come, your will be done. So God, I don't want to just be the type of person who prays and says, hey, help me. I want to know, God, is there something that you're concerned with that I need to be more concerned about because I know my place in your kingdom is better than your place in mine. So you praise and then you make requests and you say, I have some needs, God. And God knows and he said you could ask. He said you can ask. He knows. He knows it's tough. So make some requests. And then the A would be acknowledge. Acknowledge your dependence on God that, you know, I need to be forgiven. You're the one who forgives me. And I know that there's something in my life that still needs to be uprooted and that I need to give over to you, and I acknowledge that. And then the Y is just yield. Stay in it. Stay there for a moment and say, God, I just want to hear from you. And so that's how we're going to close today. And I confess, this is going to be a little awkward. But let's just close like that. Can we kind of get the lights a little dimmer? Let's just pray. Would you pray right now? And maybe you're here and you're like, oh my gosh, what? I don't do this. Well, maybe you just pray, God, are you even there? But maybe right now you would just start a prayer that's like that. You would start with praise. an acknowledgement of God. Maybe you have a request or two. Acknowledge your dependence and your need for forgiveness. And then just listen. Just stay in the moment and listen. And here, I'm just going to leave. And I want you to just stay in that moment as long as you need to stay in that moment. And then if you're done, you can just get up and discreetly leave. Please just be as discreet as you can so as not to disturb others. This time is yours.